The tax cut package passes the House, and investors are feeling good.
Is there anything wrong with this picture?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Happy Friday. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is December 17th. Coming up, a conversation with the president of the University of California about staying competitive amid state budget cuts. And as the UK turns to nuclear power, what are they going to do with all that nuclear waste?
But first to the tax cut compromise that was sent to President Obama's desk, more than $850 billion worth. It includes Bush-era tax cut extensions, some new tax cuts, and unemployment benefits that have been extended for the long-term jobless. What could it possibly do for economic growth?
Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS MoneyWatch. She's with us from New York every Friday, and today, no exception. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
What are these tax cuts projected to do for the economy next year?
Well, given the conversations I've had with analysts and economists, they're looking at an additional half to full 1 percentage point of growth next year in the economy. Now, let me put that in perspective. We only grew by 2.5% in the last quarter. So if we're going to get pushed up to 3.5% or even 4% next year, that's a pretty big deal for the economy.
In proportion, sure. So I'm curious, Jill, ever since the tax deal was announced, we here at Marketplace have covered what it's done to the bond market, and it's hit bonds pretty hard. Why is that, and how are people affected, everyday people?
Well, I think that the reason why the bonds really accelerated the sell-off was because of that growth. In other words, if the economy is going to grow a much greater pace next year, then maybe the Fed doesn't have to expand its bond buying program, and an improving economy really makes people start to think about stocks versus bonds. Well, here's how it really hits your pocketbook. If you look at mortgage rates, they have spiked from a low level of about 4.25% for a 30-year fixed rate to nearly 5% today on a $200,000 loan. That's an extra $90 a month. You know what? That could be the difference between a refi making sense and not making sense. On the good side, I just want to say that savers will finally start to get a little bit more interest. So rising interest rates will finally reward those good doobies who have been putting their money away all along.
Nice. All right, Jill Schlesinger from CBS Money Watch. We do thank you.
Great to be with you.
Now for another take on today's top story, let's bring in Chris Lowe. He's chief economist at FTN Financial. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
So the tax cuts passed. A lot of people are calling this a new round of stimulus. Meanwhile, I saw a new survey out today that says investors are the most bullish they've been since fall 07. Is this the beginning of a new boom?
Well, you know, it's when we see those big bullish numbers in surveys that we analysts get nervous. We actually saw exactly the same thing in November with bonds. People were so excited about the Fed's bond purchase program, they were all bullish. Since then, we've had the biggest sell-off in the bond market in about 10 years.
Right.
The problem is when something goes wrong, it's really ugly when they all rush for the exit at the same time.
Well, what is the worry that you're seeing? What evil could lurk on the horizon, Chris?
I think maybe one of the biggest threats is the European sovereign crisis. It hasn't gone away. In fact, Moody's just downgraded Irish debt 5 notches last night, and the Germans have blocked an effective expansion of the rescue package.
So that European debt crisis could rear its ugly head for us again. Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thanks, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
The Food and Drug Administration says the world's best-selling cancer medication cannot be used to treat breast cancer. The drug is called Avastin, and it's made by the pharmaceutical company Roche. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports.
Avastin brings in about $6 billion a year for Roche. The FDA's move could cut $1 billion in sales. The FDA said Avastin didn't extend patient survival and was accompanied by serious side effects. Dr. Hyman Muss at the University of North Carolina says in his experience, those side effects are manageable. He says the FDA's unusual decision might have something to do with cost.
Insurers, Medicare reimbursing for the cost of the drug, it certainly adds to the cost of health care.
Roche says it will appeal the FDA decision. Until that hearing, Avastin remains FDA approved for breast cancer patients. In New York, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Apple has announced another big product launch for early next year, but if you want to get in on the action this time, you won't have to stand in line. And that's the point. Marketplace's Eve Troeh reports.
Apple's new App Store opens January 6th on a screen near you. This one will sell applications for your laptop or desktop computer. So you can get that iPhone lightsaber on your MacBook Pro. Maybe, but technology writer Chris Null says it's bigger than that.
We're talking about applications that can run from tens to hundreds to thousands of dollars, from Microsoft Office to Adobe Photoshop.
Apple's expected to take 30% of all App Store purchases. Null says software companies will pretty much have to give in, because the App Store will be the way Mac users pick computer programs, the way they now pick music on iTunes.
It is exactly like iTunes. You'll be able to make a one-click purchase and download it immediately.
Software companies have offered online downloads for years of their own products. What's new here is that Apple will sell everyone's programs for them and get a big cut. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, December 17th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? Globally, the amount of power from nuclear plants is expected to quadruple over the next 20 years.
The U.K. is among the countries open to building new nuclear reactors, which raises an important question. What to do with all that radioactive waste? From London, reporter Christopher Wirth has more.
For workers at this nuclear facility in northern England, that slow, constant beep of the plant's monitoring system is a reassuring sound.
So this makes sure that no radiation has escaped from the plant.
Carl Steele is with Sellafield Limited, the company that operates this site within the scenic Lake District. He says if that steady beep turns into an alarm, I should run as fast as I can.
Yeah, don't wait for me, just run, yeah.
This plant reprocesses most of the UK's most dangerous high-level nuclear waste, and that waste will remain in this building for the next 50 to possibly even 100 years. The question is, then what? Britain hopes to build what's known as a geological repository for radioactive waste deep below the Earth's surface, much like what the U.S. has tried and failed to do at Yucca Mountain in Nevada. And Cherry Tweed is with the U.K.'s Nuclear Decommissioning Authority. She says that waste would stay there for a long, long time.
Hundreds of thousands to possibly a million years.
I caught up with Tweed at this local community meeting in Keswick, a tourist town not far from the nuclear plant. Residents here are discussing the possibility of building an underground repository nearby.
First of all, good afternoon and thank you for coming.
And so far, this area around the facility has been the only place to express an interest in hosting a repository.
Getting the support of the local community will be absolutely key to the process.
But it won't be easy to persuade locals like Yvette Kahane, even though she's lived alongside the nuclear industry for most of her life.
But I'm not sure as to whether actually deep disposal is the safest way to deal with it.
Among people's concerns are worries that waste could contaminate groundwater. But underground storage does seem to be the way Europe is heading. Last month, the European Union required all member countries to develop programs for building nuclear repositories. In Cumbria, England, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Today is the last day to ship something using standard delivery and still have it arrive by Christmas. Well, assuming the weather cooperates, it is not doing that in Europe. As Anne-Marie McNerney reports from London, that's not helping shoppers or shippers.
This weekend, the UK is bracing itself for a massive snowstorm. And that's on top of what the British Royal Mail system has already said is the worst December in almost 30 years. Simon Veal is the director of Global Freight Solutions, the UK's biggest parcel and carrier service. He says there's a chance that some presents won't arrive on time for Christmas.
My estimate would be something like 4 million parcels are in warehouses of parcel carriers at the moment. They've got to clear that. They've got this weekend before Christmas, of course, but the snow's falling again in much of the country. So who knows how much they can clear of the backlog.
But the weather hasn't left everyone out in the cold. Those hoping for a festive frolic under the mistletoe may be in luck. The holiday plant grows better in wet weather. The mistletoe industry in the UK reports that there'll be a bumper crop this year. In London, I'm Anne-Marie McNerney for Marketplace.
Now, further proof that money, Jeremy, doesn't necessarily buy you happiness.
Yeah.
In China, the population is getting richer every year, right? The economy is growing and a lot of people are coming into the middle class, but they're also becoming increasingly dissatisfied. From Beijing, here's the BBC's Chris Hogg.
The Chinese economy is growing at a rate of nearly 10% this year, the fastest growth anywhere in the world. But according to a survey from the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, people here are the least happy they've been in 5 years. The survey blames rising food prices, corruption amongst government officials, and a growing gap between rich and poor. Dr. Kerry Brown from the London think tank Chatham House says many Chinese are having trouble adjusting to an increasingly capitalist society.
You know, you kind of have problems of people trying to compete with each other, greater competitiveness in society. I mean, you know, the state isn't really looking after people.
The Chinese government is acutely concerned about the effect that economic growth could have on social stability, and the results of this survey will only fuel those worries. In Shanghai, I'm the BBC's Chris Hogg for Marketplace.
A Taiwanese man, Jeremy, had the misfortune of dropping a bag containing more than $6,000 of his money into a shredding machine at work.
Oh.
So many questions with this. Why, anyway, why the bag and shredding? Anyway, good thing in Taiwan, you can take your puzzle of cash to a special investigations unit at the Justice Ministry and have it pieced together free of charge. There is
a service
that they do to take your broken cash and put it together. A government forensic scientist worked for 7 days piecing that money back into an acceptable condition where it could be spent again. That scientist, Jeremy, do you know her nickname?
No, what is it?
The Jigsaw Expert.
I wonder whether she was paid $6,000 to do that.
Something tells me no. You're listening to the Midday Update. Happy Friday. It's December 17th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org.
Well, California's incoming Governor Jerry Brown had a blunt warning for the state's educators when he spoke in L.A. this week. Get ready for more budget cuts come January. Mr. Brown is taking over a state with a $25 billion budget deficit.
But California is also a state known around the world for its top-notch public universities, places like Berkeley and UCLA. So how do California and other states like Michigan and Virginia keep their public universities competitive in this economy? After all, private universities aren't tied to the ups and downs of state tax revenues. Let's turn to Mark Udoff. He's the president of the University of California, and he joins us now. Mr. Udoff, welcome to Marketplace.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Obviously, the tough spot for a public university is that the mission is to offer an education of top quality at an affordable cost. And at the same time, you want to make sure that you have the money to spend on faculty to remain competitive with private institutions. How do you fulfill both of those goals without either making drastic cuts or raising tuition?
We have raised our fees, tuition to other people, to roughly $12,000. We're still below a number of other prominent public universities. But the really important thing is not just what you charge, but who you teach. So what we've done is we've tried to modulate the system to make sure that if you're making under $80,000, you're not paying anything. We really do need to do something about faculty salaries in particular. But I don't know what to say. I'm a believer in markets. If you want the best people, you need to pay for it. And you're paying for people who not only transmit knowledge, but create knowledge.
Do the politicians at the state level, the ones who are controlling the purse strings, do they understand how important it is to stay competitive with the big private institutions?
I think some of them do understand, but I would say most of them don't. And there's always the danger that you'll be treated as just one more state agency, and we are different. Our place in bringing California back is critically important. I mean, we will create the jobs and the new products. You know, we're responsible in part, obviously, for Silicon Valley, for the agricultural revolution. it seems to me those are the types of things that will bring California back. We're not going to be the low tax state. We're not going to be the low regulatory state. We have to be smarter, and being smarter involves higher education.
Do you think that it makes sense for any parts of a university to go private, to get away from the woes of the state?
I don't think it makes sense. We're a consummately California institution. The people of the state have paid for it over 100 years. They've sent their children and grandchildren. I can't guarantee that the tuition doesn't go up, but I think we have to preserve the access and preserve the quality, and we need to figure out formulas to do that. We're not going to throw in the towel and say we're a private institution. I don't think that works for this university.
Mark Udoff, president of the University of California, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, sir.
And there's an extended interview with President Udoff that has his views on faculty salaries. That's at our website, marketplace.org.
And finally, we're talking, of course, about cash-strapped education systems, and the school board in Los Angeles, Jeremy, has voted to bring in some cash by allowing corporations to sponsor school programs. They're not going to be able to advertise, per se, but just to put their corporate logo in the school cafeteria, maybe on the football field.
I think this is a slippery slope, Steve. I just hope it doesn't come to the point where today's calculus class is brought to you by AIG.
Oh. Hate it when that happens.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.